You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 463. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on the show tonight, at a somewhere Michigan, Mr. Tom Trauma.
Yes, of the new classic crew. How's it going, guys?
Can we call ourselves that, or do we just have to let the adoring?
I'm calling us that.
Yeah, makes you wonder,
I took a break last week so you guys could have a little more diversity, and now we're back to basically three guys who are on the back side of the mountain, over the hill.
Over the hill is probably pretty accurate. We've been doing this for 463 episodes, which is too many.
The fact that I'm afraid to tell a story because I'm afraid I already told that story, but so be it.
Yeah, that happens on podcasts that I listen to from time to time, where I've been listening to it for years and years, and then one of the hosts will chime in with something that they've said before and tell a whole story, and you can tell that the other one is just like chewing on their tongue, trying not to interrupt them because they know it's been in there before.
But isn't that great that you recognize that in somebody else? Meanwhile, you'll tell the same stupid story three times without recognizing it. Isn't that strange?
I recognize it, and I can feel the pain of the co-host as they have to awkwardly try to seg out of it. Speaking of awkward pain.
And the story gets slightly better each time. Yes. John's cringing right now.
Well, yeah, that's John. John Gentile is our other co-host tonight out of somewhere Pennsylvania.
Many times I've loved and many times been beaten, but many times I've gazed along the open road.
John, is that the new Greta Van Fleet song I hear you singing?
That's Led Zeppelin doing Over the Hills and Far Away. Thank you.
You cannot stump me with Led Zeppelin. My kid tried it. He came over one time and he's like, name that tune. He was trying to tell me get me to guess whether it was Greta Van Fleet or Led Zeppelin. But I'm like, dude, I think I know every single Led Zeppelin song. And I'm not saying I know most Led Zeppelin songs. I'm saying I think I know every single Led Zeppelin song that was ever made.
Led Zeppelin's amazing. I love Led Zeppelin. All letters. All except for
I loved them, but I literally haven't listened to them for years and years and years. I have every one of their albums. I haven't listened to for years.
Amish, you should get the remasters. They're excellent remasters.
Oh, I'm sick of buying the same albums over and over, John.
I think we got a problem on tonight's show, guys. John seems to be of a level of energy that I am not going to be able to even approach. If we could have is it nap time yet? Like, does this show have nap breaks?
That legal weed's just not enough for you, is it, Adam? We need legal coke in Canada so that you can podcast properly.
I was thinking the other night about how much I would get done if I was just cranked on amphetamines at all times. But then I would die. But there would probably be like a week where man, like I could accomplish all the little projects that I keep letting fall away. Because I've been having a lot of those moments, Tom. I mean, you probably have a lot of them because you're ancient, where mm-hmm. it gets to that point in the evening where I'm like, I'm gonna do stuff, and then 8 minutes into it, I'm like, I might go to bed.
Yeah. One time when I was driving up a hill in San Francisco, I had my car windows down, and there was this guy.
And an onion tied to your belt.
There was this guy that was riding up the hill on a bicycle, and he was naked or almost naked. And he was just riding up next to the car windows and just screaming for 15 seconds. He would just go, "Wah!" stop for like 15 seconds, and he would speed to the next car, go, whoa! And
was he passing you, or was he falling back?
He was actually passing us. That's only because we were going like slow because there's like cars in front of us, right? And so he zooms up the hill and over the mountain. And I'm sure he was jacked out on amphetamines of some sort. And I wonder, like, the next day, does he wake up and he's like, man, that was a great day yesterday? Or does he like not remember at all? Or are these his final hours? Like, when you're that jacked out on amphetamines, like what's the next step? Because I genuinely don't know.
I mean, I want to be that guy just like of the internet, and then I can get all my stuff done again for a week until I die. That's the problem. It's like none of the drugs that are going to actually help me accomplish it are going to keep me alive for longer than a month or so. So I don't understand how anyone else does it.
That heart can stop sometimes.
I feel that like every once in a while, I wonder if like is everyone a vampire? And I'm not, but I'm the only one that knows. I'm the only one that doesn't really understand that vampires exist, but everyone else is a vampire and they realize it and they have all this vampire energy and I'm just fucking toiling away here, unaware that I don't have the powers. I think that's...
Well, speaking of vampires, we got an email about vampires. You can always use that podcast at punknews.org. This is from Nathaniel. Here's what Nathaniel says. Hello, podcast. Episode 462's discussion about Danzig's new movie reminded me to write in about my recent experience seeing him perform with the Misfits outside of Seattle.
Did First you guys all, talk about Danzig without me?
We did.
Oh, I'm super pissed now.
First of all, if you're ever in Seattle, check out Zion's Gate Records. It's a small shop with a well-curated collection of vinyl and collectibles that will be of particular interest to punks and metalheads. I bought 4 bootleg Misfits 7-inches and chatted with the clerk, who unsurprisingly was also going to the show that night. Secondly to John, months ago on a podcast episode, you dropped the hint that prices for secondhand tickets to expensive events nosedive if you wait long enough. I gotta say thank you for that tip and can confirm with listeners that this is the case. I waited until 1 week before the show and got a phenomenal seat right next to the soundboard. Perfect. For about 50% of the original price. This tip is probably especially useful if you're going by yourself, because I think most people are trying to find seats in pairs or larger groups. So thanks, John. I could probably write page after page about the show, but I'm going to be a little long. But wow, I think it was one of, if not the best show I've ever seen. Danzig at 64 outperforms people half and even one-third his age. The Misfits smashed through song after song, and they sounded and looked fantastic. The vibe of the show was honestly joyous, which I found perplexing, given the dark subject material of the songs, but I was smiling ear to ear the entire time. Even the band seemed to be having a really good time. Jerry and Danzig were all buddy-buddy, putting their arms around each other other several times throughout the show, and Danzig even told a nice story about them hanging out in NYC when they were young. I guess I was expecting a colder, more detached business like Danzig, but he was 100% dedicated to putting on a great show and was having fun doing it. If you ever saw the Jerry front of Misfits and it broke your heart like it did mine, go see the original Misfits while you can. It will heal your soul. I could go on and on, but I'll finish simply by saying Misfits forever from the Lone Punker. P.S. Shout out to Mannequin Pussy from Philly and Destroy Boys from Sacramento. I saw them at an all-ages space in Seattle 2 weeks before the Misfits, and it ruled. I've loved Mannequin Pussy since the first release, and everyone should check out both of these bands.
I like just like an awkward pause when it fits. Are you still smarting that we talked about the Misfits and you weren't here?
I guess he is.
Jeez. All right. He is.
He's gone.
Well, he's like, he tore his mic out and stomped out of the room.
No. My son came up behind me and was yelling at me. And so I turned the microphone off so I could talk to him.
Oh, well, that's very professional of you. Anyways, are you mad?
What's that?
Are you mad about that we talked about the Misfits and you weren't here?
No, I just, you know, I always try to bring like the Misfits or Danzig into the conversation because I hate most of the crap we talk about. I just hate that it happened when I was.
We just talked about his like bad snuff films. Like we wasn't anything.
And I think we actually talked about that the week before too. So it's all good.
You didn't miss too much. As for the email, I love hearing that going to events heals people's souls. That's wonderful. And I can totally vouch for, the wonderful ticket buying opportunities that you can have if you are a strange loser that goes to things alone and only needs one seat. Not that I'm calling the person a strange loser. I'm calling myself that in most cases.
What if your soul is so covered with scar tissue that nothing can get to it?
I think both of you are kind of zagged out. I think it's gonna be kind of a weird episode. I'm processing
some very punk information that my son just gave me. His seating for the conference tennis tournament tomorrow.
Mm.
The punkiest sport there is, tennis.
One man, one ball. It's not about winning. It's about doing your best.
You get two balls, but.
One man, two balls.
Wait, hold on. You get two balls on a pinball machine when it like you get extra ball mode and there's two flying around? Because that's exciting.
The game starts, they give you two balls. And
are they both in the air?
Good times. No, you get two chances at your serve.
No, so I want like multi-ball mode tennis. I would watch tennis then.
While you two are reminiscing about tennis and pinball memories, we've got some more mail here. This is from Serbia, I believe. We'll read the letter. Yeah, Serbia. Hi, Punk News. We are a punk rock band called Shoplifters from Novi Sad, Serbia. Our new album, Secret Free World, is out for a little over a month, and we would like to share it amongst the punk rock community as much as possible. It was released by five respectable labels worldwide: Brass Records and Brass Neck Records in the UK, Pop Kid Records in USA, Waterslide Records in Japan, Bartolini Records in Spain, and White Russian Records in Netherlands. People who are familiar with our music would often describe it as a unique mix of influences from bands like Husker Du, Snuff, Dag Nasty, Descendants, Buzzcocks, China Drum, Moving Targets, and Big Drill Car. We would be very grateful if you would consider playing it on your show. And if you like what you hear, you can check us out at shoplifters.bandcamp.com. Thank you from Vojin. Vojin, we will play one of your tracks probably at the end of the show. I think we're going to play something before that, but at the end of the show, we will play one of your band's tracks, Shoplifters from Serbia. Thanks for listening. You can reach that podcast at punknews.org.
Cool. Serbia.
A lot of Serbians in Niagara Falls, guys.
Can you imagine somebody's listening to us in Serbia? That's kind of ponderous, man.
That's cool, man.
It is really cool. Oh, what the hell was that?
That was your internet freaking out because I don't know. We mentioned Serbia. They tapped our line.
That's what it was. It was the wiretap kicking in.
No, there's. I'm serious though. There's a huge Serbian population in Niagara Falls, and they are incredibly celebratory of the fact that Nikola Tesla came here to do a lot of work when he was working on, helping modernize and invent the electrical systems that we use today. So there's this really cool statue of Nikola Tesla standing atop like a giant turbine that they built right next to Niagara Falls, and the local Serbian community paid for that. Pretty badass. So
that's cool.
There you go.
I also heard that the local Serbian community goes to every event that Adam MCs. He has a huge draw among the Serbian community.
The thing I MC is like on the other side of the hill from that statue of Tesla in a way.
See, exactly.
The statue of Tesla.
I doubt it. It
is a counterpart to myself spatially. So
you should get a giant turbine and just stand on it. See what happens.
At the very least, I should get some Serbians to pay for it.
There you go. There you go, Adam.
John, this is a fucking weird episode. I think we should all go to bed.
Yeah. Speaking of people that have not ripped off or have not been ripped off by Thomas Edison, unfortunately, there were some some notable people passed away in the punk community just today. Like we talked about Larry Wallace last week, which was pretty sad. But I mean, honestly, we've said it before. At least one of these was pretty unexpected. But before that, Barry Masters of Eddie and the Hot Rods passed away. He was the singer, and I think it was fairly unexpected.
He was the sole constant member of the band.
Right, right.
Eddie and the Hot Rods.
If you haven't checked out Eddie and the Hot Rods, you definitely should, especially their second album, Life on the Line. And you could call it proto-punk or pub rock. It's just great rock and roll music that influenced some punk rockers. Captain Sensible shared a pretty nice story about how one time his solo band broke down and Barry Masters came out and picked him up in the Eddie the Hot Rods van and really helped him out. And so, I mean, it's a shame. And at least in the States, I think Eddie and the Hot Rodgers are somewhat well known in the UK. In the States, they're not really that well known at all, I don't think. And they've got that incredible song, You Can Do Anything You Want to Do. But they also have albums worth of great stuff. But that second album, Life on the Line, is fantastic. And you should check it out. So we send our condolences to Barry and his friends and family. Another one that was probably, at least in the States, even more unexpected, and this just broke like 2 hours ago or 3 hours ago, Kim Shattuck of the Muffs passed away, which is really sad and really unexpected. I think she was like 53 or something. She was suffering with ALS.
56, I think.
56. She was
young, very young.
Yeah, she was suffering with ALS for the past 2 years, which I don't think anybody really knew that.
No, I have no idea.
And not only that, is she literally just released a Coolies EP, and there's a new Muffs album coming out in next month or this month. And so I don't know if she did all that material because she knew it was getting worse, or this just I don't know a whole lot about ALS. So I don't know, like, can you think you're doing well and then all of a sudden you pass away? Maybe, I don't know, you know. But this is an artist that like a lot of people really liked. And even if you want to say a huge fan of the band, like you definitely understood that the Muffs are a cool band and the people are cool people. I mean, the three main Muffs had been in the band for a long time, and that's saying something, you know. And a lot of the bands that I know, they're like, oh, we played with the Muffs, or we played with Kim, or we knew Kim, or we saw Kim once. And everybody's like, she was so cool. And so it's sad and tragic, and I don't know what else to say about it, but I'm sad about it. I mean, Kim Shattuck, amazing singer, an amazing singer. And so really, I don't know, what else can you say? It's sad and it's a bummer.
It is. I mean, anyone that kind of came up in the mid '90s punk boom, like Kim, was one of those like constants as like a personality that like that was, but and was really, I think, like blazing a trail that seemed to have a little bit more underground cred than your Green Days and everything of the world at the time when they were all breaking. So like she was an important figure just from that standpoint of being like one of the people that was really spearheading, you know, that kind of punk rock at that era. So, yeah, it's a super bummer. The new Muffs record comes out when? It's like October, I believe, right? It's
yeah, like 2 weeks, I think.
Shit, where is it? I don't know. I mean, you folks can look it up. But yeah, so there is a new Muffs record that is on the way out, that was like in the can, ready to go. I this is the first I had even heard that she was ill. I mean, like, what she very briefly was a member of the Pixies not too long ago, during one of their phases of their reunions too. So I remember her popped up a little bit more in the news in the
bet you it was longer ago than you think, but
yeah.
Didn't she follow right away when Kim Deal left right away?
Yeah, she probably did. She wasn't in the band
for probably like 10 years ago, wasn't it?
You know, she was so cool about that. You could tell that, like she said the reason they kicked her out is because she was stage diving, and like yeah. That's just so awesome. You know what I mean? Like, she's too cool for the Pixies, you know, which is awesome.
I just like that they feel like they constantly have to have a woman in that role now. It's like our original bass player is a woman. Every bass player has to be a woman. Did she get that guy from Metallica? Robert Trujillo.
There was a cool little story that I saw that I think was it that Steve Ademic had shared after when he heard of Kim's death there, and he said that after she was kicked out of the Pixies, and in his words, kicked out of the Pixies for something petty, he said that he had talked to her, and even then she defended the band and was saying that like she was a huge fan and what an honor it was even to be with them for that brief time. And just that's really the personality that I think a lot of people have been confirming about Kim. Like she was like, it wasn't just a musician that a lot of people liked. Like she was a person that a lot of people liked. And yeah, it's sad. There's no two ways about it. So should we rock a Muff song here and we'll
carry on. Let's do it.
All right. Unless you guys have anything in particular queued up, what we'll do, and I should pause and ask you, do you?
No, whatever's cool, man.
Okay, here. So let's do this. So we're gonna play a song from their 1995 sophomore record, Blonder and Blonder. It is called End It All. It's a little bit more of a low key song from the Muffs, but you know, it fits the mood, I think. So here you go. So this is the Muffs from 95. We're back. That was the Muffs, and the song was called End It All. We are going to talk about some of the I guess non-immediately breaking sad news that happened in the punk rock world this week. So the first of them, this one came right out of fucking left field as far as my understanding of how the world works anymore. So I guess I'll see what you guys think. So Concord Music, the company, went and they purchased Victory Records and the associated publishing company that Victory Records controls, called Another Victory Publishing. The terms were not disclosed, but Billboard estimates that the sale was above the 25 million mark. I saw articles floating around that said it was a billion, but that's insane.
The funny thing is, Billboard said it was between 28 million to 32 million. They were guessing. And then people saw it was, so the people at least 30 million, and then it got to at least 35 million, all based off the misunderstanding of Billboard statement, you know, so it kept going up.
Yeah.
Know?
Like the Twitter, game of telephone on this was basically like $50 billion. It's like Victory Records is worth more than Facebook, apparently. Anyway. So they purchased it for many millions of dollars. So the purchase by Concord follows a string of previous acquisitions. So what they're picking up here is they're picking up 4,500 masters that Victory owned, 3,500 compositions, and they're adding that to a catalog that they already own that is massive, because there's like 16,000 albums and 390,000 compositions in the Concord catalog alone. So previously, Concord had purchased portions of Victory's catalog, including music by Taking Back Sunday. So the now former owner and founder of Victory Records, Tony Brummel, he released a statement where he said,
frequent subject of podcast scorn.
Frequent. I mean, not too much in these days because Victory is quieter, but man, back in the day.
There
was an article every week about some band suing him.
Frequent litigant, or him suing every band. Remember when he tried to sue Thomas Konolsky for $1 million? It's like, Tony.
So anyway, Tony released a statement. He said, Concord has a great team, infrastructure, and financial backing and support to do great things with the music and entertainment assets that they represent. Victory and Another Victory's great catalog of music and songs will be in caring and fantastic hands going forward. We had a great run, and with Concord, it will only continue. So
let me translate this. Yes,
please do.
They backed the Brinks truck up to my house, and I really don't give a shit what happens to this music now. It's in great hands, please. It's a corporate entity. Say what you will about the original founder, but at least he had some sort of a personal stake in what was happening. Now it's just managed by some equity firm or something.
Yeah,
that I've never heard of. I mean, that doesn't mean much. I mean, I don't know who the big music, but it's whatever. Good for him, man.
I mean,
every person who starts a label when they're 15 years old out of their parents' garage wants to be in the position he's in right now.
Dude, well, that's what's frustrating is there are dozens and dozens of stories about how Tony Brummel's an asshole or a jerk, and how many bands has he seen?
All anecdotal. I've never met the man. He might be a sweetheart, but yes, there's a lot of anecdotal, damning anecdotal evidence.
And so, what? Like, why couldn't this be Mike Park? You know. Or why couldn't this be Jello Biafra? No, it's Tony Brummel who's getting the mega cash out.
That Narma Records, you know.
Why could it be Narma Records, you know? but I mean, to a degree, that maybe that underscores the nature of capitalism. I'm not anti-capitalism myself, but time and time again, Jeff Bezos, Steve Jobs, we see the richest people are the most rottenest. You know, and it's true. We're the most. But, I mean,
the $30 million that Tony Brummels is getting is nothing compared to those guys.
But yeah, but I'm saying in the field that he's in, which is independent records, he's the champ. He's bigger than Sub Pop. He's bigger than Matador. He's bigger than Alternative Tentacles. He's bigger than Fat. And you know, he's got the most.
No, you think he's bigger than Fat?
Yeah, Fat is not worth $30 million.
The thing is, I can't believe that he's worth $30 million. That Victory is worth $30 million.
Maybe he's not. You know, I mean, honestly, like, both for his credit and both for the Concord's credit, maybe he's really only like $10 million, and maybe they're puffing it up to make it seem like a bigger asset. The other thing, which I will give him credit for, is that he says he's going to employ all 30 of his employees instead of just saying, "All right, get lost." Which, who knows if that'll be true a year from now? Who knows if it's true now? But if it is true, I will say I'll give him credit there. Most companies would just say, "All right, see you guys later. Get another job somewhere else." And so, if he's keeping those guys on board, I will give him credit for that. But it is frustrating that the guys that get the biggest payout, Jeff Bezos, you know, Steve Jobs, in this rec field, Tony Brummel, it's always the people with the least amount of morality at all, the least amount of
dedication. You know, the funny thing, John, is, I mean, I commented on this. I kind of made a joke about it on the site about, "Wow, $30 million. You know, that's folding money, right?" And somebody said to me, a regular, said, "I can't believe it's not more than that." But I'm going, really? Because music sales suck.
Who's buying record labels in 2019? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Because music sales suck. Plus, I mean, Victory's got an impressive size catalog. But, I mean, there are a lot of opportunities for movies and commercials. And these companies that buy these big catalogs, that's usually the type of stuff they try to exploit. You know, more commercial interest. But I mean, is Taking Back Sunday going to be on an Audi commercial or something? Maybe. I don't know.
So there's a whole bunch of thoughts I got on this. And the one is that like it bewilders me what the value of any of this stuff is. Like, all right, I suppose you could take one of the big bands that are on Victory. You could take, you say you're Taking Back Sunday, or Thrice, or was Thrice and Thursday on there?
They're not selling 100,000 physical copies.
But you could go and do your fancy vinyl reissues of this or that and sell it to the diehards.
2,000 copies, though, Adam. There's just not that much money in it.
Well, that's what you think. But on the other hand, like, they're just pressing product at that point, right? They're not paying for the recordings to be made or anything. Maybe the profit margin's better.
Because you don't have the $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 studio time.
But who knows? For all I know, you can sell 35 copies of any of that. Right?
The bummer for me was Victory actually distributed some pretty cool stuff that wasn't Victory, like GMM Records, Give Me My Money Records out of Atlanta, a great street punk label. You could order their stuff through the Victory website. It was fairly user-friendly. And the fact of the matter is, I've been known to do mail order business with them. I don't know that I ever bought anything necessarily on the Victory label, even though in the early days, there was some pretty decent hardcore punk stuff came out on the Victory label.
Or at least
was reissued on that label. Like, I think the first Cause for Alarm EP was reissued on the Victory label.
Victory Records got started with Integrity. The band Integrity.
Was it Integrity? Okay.
Yeah,
not, so, not, I mean, not the guiding principle of integrity. Band.
The band, I mean, that's crazy. Yeah, that a band that started doing, you know, basement hardcore shows, yeah, is now $30 million. But I mean,
look at Epitaph, John. You know, they started out as a punk label, but then saw the dollar signs, and you know, maybe he did the same thing. Maybe Tony Brummel is the like a legit hardcore basement punk, but then all of a sudden, you know, you stretch it a little further and you start, you know, cash starts rolling in. You know, let's face it, this label wouldn't, he wouldn't be selling this label right now for $30 million if all he had was Integrity and Cause for Alarm, you know.
Right. Right.
Like $30.
So there's some weird angles that we can take on this. The first of all is that, like, yeah, as much as I have been a contributor to the give Tony Brummel shit on the internet trend, the fact that his company is going to just continue to employ everyone in some way, at least for now, is sort of nice. Like, I can't
always bother.
Like, in a way, like, that's kind of the fantasy. Like if someone showed up at my place of work and bought out everything that we did, and then we were all just, we had like a pile of money, and then we said, hey, we don't have to work this grueling job that we do anymore. Let's just open a, you know, let's open a flower shop or something.
I see you as like a taco truck guy. Yeah.
Yeah, let's open a taco truck, but like everyone who works here can just work at the taco truck. Like, that'd be great, right? Because
and we'll still pay you like an executive salary.
Yeah, like that, like, perfect. I'm down. But anyways, but so that aside, because I don't know how that actually works.
Have a you taco ever looked, truck?
No, that
you stand inside and people come up and say, "Do you want a burrito or do you want nachos or do you want tacos?" And they tell you what kind of meat they want, and you can put any of those meat in any of those carrying.
And it's vessels. it's like 142 degrees inside there.
Yeah, I actually meant the human resources end of it. But anyways, no. have you ever looked into what Concord Music is,
John,
and
I'd
who
like
they
to
own?
Invest in your taco truck. I'm sorry, say it again, Adam.
Because if
I want tacos now.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I actually have some leftover taco meat in my fridge because we had Taco Tuesday yesterday. What were we talking about?
We're talking about Concord Music here. So,
okay, sorry, go ahead.
If you really dig into it, Concord has a fair number of punk music and adjacent labels that you own records from now in their as part that of I their never- Voltron here. As well as a few labels that are just fucking like historically important. So from the punk standpoint, Concord Music appears to be the home now of Nitro, which was the
dude from the Offspring,
the dude Dexter from the Allen. Offspring's label that was releasing all the AFI records back when AFI was a big thing.
So I gotta say this. There's two Sloppy Seconds albums that are held on Nitro Records that absolutely, positively need to be repressed. Maybe
if they're
under the control of Concord, maybe I'll actually be able to pick up a nice vinyl press of those records.
Let's hope not, because a certain somebody makes a little bit of pocket change, picking those CDs up used in the $3 bin and then flipping them on Discogs.
Yeah, exactly.
They own Fearless Records.
Okay.
Which I think
horrible emo label.
Fearless inflicted upon the world both the band The Plain White Tees and all of those Punk Goes Whatever compilations. So fuck them.
I was at the Warped Tour with my daughter last year, the year before, and I got this Fearless Records compilation. It is I wouldn't wipe my dog's ass with this thing.
Tommy wiped your dog's ass.
Great label.
So just in terms of maybe more general rock and roll records, are labels that they own Razor and Tie. They own Wind Up.
What is Razor and Tie? Is that like a new cock rock label or what?
I'm unsure of who exactly.
I mean, they put out the last like Wilson record. It's just sort of a,
but then this gets weird. So on the classic front, they now own the VJ Records brand, and they own Stax.
Mm.
Wow, that's weird.
So both of those,
Stax and Victory, the two most important labels in the history of
both of those are in, rock. And most importantly, they own Kids Bop.
Ugh. I'd still take it over Fearless.
So there's a lot of stuff that's in that family. Now, I'm sort of fascinated by like what is the day-to-day operations of a label like this. So let's say they do own as many things as we quoted in our obviously perfectly fact-checked article that we posted, right? So they have, you know, tens of thousands of records from all these various labels they've picked up. That are in there that they own the rights to at the very least, right? So, what are you doing with that? Like you cannot be actively pushing all of that stuff into stores, right? Like there's just isn't that much.
I think maybe they do though because like when I lived down in Harrisburg, I would go to this place called Second and Charles, which is like a chain, and
new and used place,
right. It was actually a pretty cool shop, and
it has every single thing you could ever want in your life.
Like they have like a large new and used vinyl selection, and the new vinyl selection you would see stuff that like you wouldn't see other like represses of stuff that I wouldn't buy, but like maybe somebody else would buy, like, you know, represses like Punk Goes, you know, Pop on vinyl, you know, or Blake Shelton on vinyl. Like I'm not buying that, but those people going to that store is. So like maybe. I mean, I think maybe it's like the Cleopatra. Like Cleopatra puts out these. You're like, who is buying like this? Like the 97th Johnny Thunders bootleg live recording, you know? Or who is buying, you know? Any weird thing?
I was actually just on the Cleopatra website, John, because I wanted to get a couple things from New Red Archives, owned by Cleopatra, distributed by Cleopatra.
I think the business model for that is, and I don't think Cleopatra is as big as Concord, but I think the business model is they have distribution, and so the buyers just buy whatever they have. They're like, oh, this will sell. And so even though they're not selling a ton of any one item, they sell a ton of lots of items. And so
they have the real sketchy recordings too. I think that's a little different situation, I think.
Yeah, but who's buying that shit? You know what I mean?
Because if it has Cleopatra on the label, you should avoid it.
Not always. Sometimes, but the weird thing about Cleopatra, some of the stuff's like really good.
I don't know, man.
Who's buying that? Somebody is.
You know, they're the master also of like re-recorded. What's great? A re-record, you know, those UK great UK sub songs re-recorded in the 2000s by a bunch of old men.
But so I agree with Adam. It's like, what is the business model? Like, what's the plan here?
They do have current stuff that they put out, and like the business model makes more sense for that, right? So Concord, like they were behind the new Iggy Pop record, Free. They're behind the new Pornographers record that just came out last week.
Big seller.
Right. But like active bands that are out there touring it are like records that you would want to go into a record store and purchase today. Right. So like that makes sense. And I understand why you would have staff to do that kind of stuff. Right. But what are they doing with these massive catalogs of stuff? Are they sitting on them?
Are they going to do like a Rhino type of thing where they lovingly go back through it and curate it?
I wonder how much of just like a publishing play it is to try to like get this, like get, have this big catalog of stuff, shop it around to Hollywood to try to get these, you know, music picked up for films and TV and stuff like that. And then just like reap the benefits that way. It's just like, it just bewilders me.
Can't be that much money though, Adam.
I just like as someone that has to, you know, as I'm sitting down at my day job, go, and what am I doing in this particular hour going to pay anyone's bills in the office, or is it not, right? Or is this going to cost money? I look at something like this and I'm like, I don't understand how anyone is making any particular money doing any of this stuff. It's just, but I mean,
as a side note, what does this mean for guys like Hardy Flanagan who have a deal with Victory? But Victory is no longer Victory, so now they're signed to another label, even though it's essentially Victory. And it's like, so all the marketing plans, all that stuff is out the window now. How frustrating must that be as an artist, you know?
Well, he signed to victory at this point in time. He should have known what he potentially was getting himself into, I would think.
I hear you. I hear you.
You know, when I was a kid, I was in my dream job. And, you know, even now, as an old man, no, my dream job is to be the guy who works at like Rhino Records, who has to sift through the catalog and like pick the 19 songs that go on like the greatest hits album. Wouldn't that be the best job?
No, I think the best job is the Four Men with Beards, where you just get to reissue really cool records all day long.
Four Men with Beards. I don't know what that is.
That's a vinyl reissue label. They find like classics and long lost classics and like reissue them and do nice jobs.
Because there's another one like Drastic Plastic. I don't know if you're familiar with Drastic Plastic. They've done some great 200 gram like classic punk records, and they're really nice. As a matter of fact, so much so that if I'm looking for it, I'll go out of my way to get their press, even though they only do like 1,000. And so you look at Discogs now at some of these classic punk records, and there's like 100 different presses. It's insane.
Not to get off topic, but the Drastic Plastic reissue of Circle Jerks Wild in the Street is the first reissue of the original version of the album, not the 1988 remix of the album, which is totally different.
Is that worth hunting down? I actually saw, I came across that the record store the other day, but it was like $28.
The answer is most definitely yes, because the story with Wild on the Streets is they lost the master tapes in 88, so they remastered it, and then like they made it sound like more heavy metal-ish than it was originally.
Yeah, you know what? I take that back. It was actually the Drastic Plastic press of Golden Jar of Hits I saw.
You know, that's the same, you know.
But I got the manifesto pressing of the Dead Kennedys Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables, which sounds great. No comment.
Nah.
No comment. Excellent. So listen.
Sorry, it's not record collecting week.
Speaking of no comment, Tegan and Sarah. Well, we've been talking about this a while. And actually, we talked about this earlier in the podcast. So Tegan and Sarah, they've got a new album and a new record out now. The new record is called "I'm Just Like You," and it's them re-recording songs from written when they were like 17 and 18. And the book is all about their high school years. And I think it's called "High School" is the name of the book. So actually, Tegan and Sarah having somewhat of a renaissance. Their last record wasn't as big of a hit as they were hoping it would be. The new record actually is getting, and the new book is getting a lot of promo, a lot of press, that kind of a thing. So they're selling out shows. They did sell out their show in San Francisco on, I believe it was Monday night. The problem was a little while before the show, they went on secondary markets and saw a ton of tickets were still in the secondary market, which most likely would not sell before the show. The result of which would be that at the show, it would be, quote, sold out, but there'd be at least 200 empty seats. So Tegan and Sarah kind of slacked back.
John, are you familiar with this venue? What size venue are we talking about?
You know, the weird thing is I never heard of this venue. I went to a bunch of shows when I lived in San Francisco or the Bay Area. I never heard of this venue. It must be a newer venue.
To have 200 empty seats in a 5,000-person venue is not that big a deal. But to have 200 empty seats in a 1,000-person venue, obviously.
In a 200-person venue. It's probably about 5,000. It's probably about 5,000 because in Philadelphia they're playing a 5,000-person venue. So anyway, so they saw these seats were empty. So what they did is at 8:15, you could come to the venue and they would see what seats were still on the secondary market. And if they were still there, you could buy that seat by donating to the Tegan and Sarah Foundation. And essentially scalping the scalper, and it apparently worked really well. People got in for cheap or fair price, and they donated to an LGBTA youth organization. And the scalpers didn't get the money back from their tickets. So Tegan and Sarah kind of undercut the scalpers, which I think is fantastic. The long story is, scalpers don't really care because they're making so much money that they don't even, like. If they weren't making money, they would have lowered the prices. So selling the last 200 tickets to them isn't even worthwhile because they're making so much money. So they still won in the end. But I'll tell you, man, like people talk trash about us covering Tegan and Sarah. I don't see Green Day doing this. I don't see, you know, any other punk band that play in Bay Area doing this. Tegan and Sarah cutting out the scalpers, which I highly approve. And why shouldn't they? The scalpers are taking food out of their mouth. If someone's wanted to pay $200 for a ticket, watch the scalper get it instead of Tegan and Sarah. I'm all for it.
They're not really taking food out of their mouth because they paid retail for the band gets a minimum.
Yeah.
Usually has an agreement. It's not like they get paid, you know, it's not like the band's getting paid by ticket sales directly.
It was actually that's not always true, Tom. Like sometimes at a bigger venue they do it. It all depends on the. There's a whole bunch of kinds of deals, but I mean the point being is scalpers serve no purpose except for to inflate ticket prices. Literally no purpose. So I'm good.
No, I agree. But it's interesting, and this is interesting for a couple of reasons because I think it's interesting that Tegan and Sarah are big enough that they have scalpers' attention. You know, when you go to a local punk show, that no scalpers are buying the tickets. There's just not that big of attention. But the other thing is, you know, somebody could have went online and bought those same seats that Tegan and Sarah, because Tegan and Sarah essentially didn't own those seats.
Right.
And they were just selling them. So I love it as a stick to the man kind of a thing. But imagine you're the poor bastard the last minute who buys your, has to get your seats on a secondary market. You get there, it's already somebody sitting in your seat for $7.
I have to imagine that they had some kind of a thing to deal with that situation should that occur. But I just had a funny, like you're walking to the Tegan and Sarah show and you see someone like, Tegan and Sarah, tickets, Tegan and Sarah. And you're like, are you Tegan Quinn? She's like, yeah, you need some tickets. You need some tickets. Yeah.
Just like holding out the can, just like by donation.
How grotesque is it that now that Ticketmaster has made scalping legal, even though it was illegal for years, how grotesque is it that artists literally have to do things that are technically illegal regarding their own tickets so their own fans can get a fair price for it?
I got to say, that is a pretty punk move. I like that.
Tegan and Sarah, they're cool. They're cool.
It's a punk move.
I'm not going to see their show, but I like it.
Like, on the other hand, it's not necessarily something that I would want to inflict upon the artists to have to try to manage.
Like, oh yeah,
like
they did it by choice, though.
Right? Yeah, like they're doing it by choice here, and in a way to make a statement, right? So that's all great, but you know, if you are a touring musician, I don't necessarily expect that you're going to have the particular wherewithal or skill set to pull off this scheme in a way that is efficient and doesn't end up screwing someone or other in some way. Like, cause you have all kinds of moving parts when you're dealing with, not only when you're dealing with just like, you know, online commerce, but online commerce that is circumventing another form of online commerce in a way that is hopefully not going to, you know, create the problem where you've sold a seat that someone else has just bought on another thing. Right. So, It's all well and good to kind of do this and make a statement about it and get in the news and all that, but you know, I'm
listen to Mr. Law and Order.
It's not that. Holy, it's just that, like I don't consider most artists to be the most stable or organized people in the first place. So I definitely don't want them trying to like take it upon themselves to like to sell tickets for a capacity seated show.
Adam, I'll tell you right now that I will never.
Adam, do you think Tegan and Sarah are literally sitting there with a spreadsheet and sorting out tickets? Yes.
But potentially, either that or they roped in a whole bunch of people to make this happen, right? Like they didn't do it off the back of a napkin, clearly, so they had some help. So,
the group that they were giving the money to for the charity, maybe they like had them put those vests on and walk around with the cans, like the Shriner Circus or something.
I guess it just seems that like, you know, it is a patchwork solution to a shitty broken system. I mean,
Adam,
yeah.
Aren't you supposed to like be saying Tegan and Sarah are the greatest and this is the greatest because they're Canadian and you say everything Canadian is the greatest? Should you be like saying how awesome this is?
Yeah, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, they're Canadian. Yeah.
They're
so like ashamed of their Canadianness that I didn't even know that.
Understandable.
I think they're from Winnipeg. I want to say they're from Winnipeg. I don't know. It's hard for me to remember who's.
Anyway, bottom line, I will never go see Metallica again unless I can buy the ticket from Lars Ulrich outside the front door. $30, dude. $30. That's what it used to cost me back in the day. I'm not paying $150 to the nosebleed.
Lars like, damn man, this is worth $60. You're like $35. He's like, I need the money. Sorry, it's Lars,
like, $35. I'm like, I'll tell you what, I'll do both for $70. Fine. John knows what I'm talking about. I've done many times the outside the venue ticket haggle.
Dude,
more time for like baseball games and stuff. Because if I really want to go see a show, I'm just going to buy the ticket. I'm not going to take the chance, especially if I'm traveling out of town. You know, I'm not going to drive 3 hours to Detroit without a ticket. You know,
I don't think I've ever like really come out like on the positive end of scalpers. Like I've sold the scalpers. They're like, I'll give you $7 for like a $50 ticket. You're like, well, I'll just keep it. You know what I mean?
Meanwhile, and you hear the opening bang. You hear the opening bang going on. They know they got you. It's just like, oh, fine.
Yeah. So I don't think I've ever. People are like, oh, yeah, I got these $8 from the scalper. And the scalper be like, $750. You're like, dude, it's like a $20 ticket. $760 for you now. It's like, fine. You know,
who are you to question me?
Yeah. Well, speaking of your buddies Green Day, who are not going to be pulling this scheme.
We have to talk about Green Day every week, Adam. Are they Canadian too? Are they secretly Canadian?
Well, this is a story about hockey, so it's kind of Canadian. Although I have to say, this story, it has the most inane pull quote of any story that we've read on this show. So news broke last week that Green Day has entered into a 2-year partnership with the National Hockey League. As part of the deal, the band's new single, Fire Ready Aim, is going to serve as the theme song for Wednesday Night Hockey. And then they're going to perform the headlining set at the 2020 NHL All-Star Game, which goes down on January 25th in St. Louis. You say St. Louis or St. Louis? What do you say?
St. Louis.
I don't know. I just want to make
sure. St. Louis, what are you, like an old-time prospector or something?
I just want to make sure I'm speaking your language here, right? Anyways, so the band's music will also appear in NHL promotional
videos. It's the same language, Adam. It's just you add use to things for no reason.
We add use to things for the queen. Anyways, so yeah, right. so the band's music will also be on like suggested arena playlists, I guess. So whatever. So as you're trying to buy like a $45 hot dog and a beer, you're gonna have to listen to the new Green Day single. But here's the quote. Here's the best thing ever. So Steve Mayer, who is the chief content officer for the NHL, which I will say sounds like a cool job, he issued a statement, and the statement said, the band members are hockey fans. The drummer, Trey Cool, is a big fan. These guys have been to games, but they're not over the top as much as Trey is. He's a San Jose fan now who, because he lives in Newport Beach, is becoming an Anaheim Ducks fan. End quote. So there's some information to help contextualize this story. Is that like, I guess reading between the lines, the rest of the band doesn't give two shits, but they like money. But you know, Trey's trying to get into the Ducks. So that's this is a thing that is happening. So Green Day, in my mind, keeps, I mean, I'm sure they don't care about their punk cred or anything like that, but they keep doing these like gigantic corporate-y things in the past year that are not at all, that are not interesting, that do not, that never make it sound like the band had anything to do with this, but that a bunch of management companies have organized this over a, you know, formal dinner somewhere. Like there was a statement that went out on Green Day's Twitter account when they announced this deal. And it was, I'm going to see if I can find it here. Like it was the most corporate speak thing for a band to all of a sudden crap out on their social media, where you're like, this statement has not gone within 500 feet of any of the band members. Where is it here? The NHL season is hereby known as Loud Season, where the toughest athletes to ever lace up a pair of skates meet the baddest rock band on the planet. Turn up the volume. Ready or fire ready aim and enjoy. Wait, did we tease a brand new song? Bunch of hashtags and a video. Like that was a tweet that Green Day put out where they spoke about themselves in the third person as the baddest rock band on the planet, and not in a way that is like fun and facetious or anything. It just in a way that clearly was a press release. And
maybe they were talking about AC/DC, like maybe like that was a side thing, you know. Like they like AC/DC, they just wanted to give them a shout out in their own thing, you know.
It's just I don't know. I mean, like, hey, I'm a hockey fan, but this is lame. This is lame. This whole thing is lame. I mean, if they wanted to if they wanted to do something, you could do something fun in punk rock with this, especially if you didn't care too much about the money. Like, go find like the shitty middle of nowhere kind of like junior team that no one cares about, but have like a, you know, have some heart and have some like good scrappy attitude about them, and give them the Green Day song. And then all of a sudden you catapult this, like this team that no one's heard of from the middle of like, you know, nowhere ass Quebec, you know, up onto the national stage because Green Day is for whatever bizarre reason backing them. Like you could do this kind of thing. And like, I don't know.
You know who has done exactly that to his credit?
Is it Morrissey?
No, it's Lars. He wrote a song for the San Jose earthquake, which is kind of, he loves soccer. So that's kind of cool of him. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's not. There's nothing cool about soccer.
But he's a Hooligan, Tom. He's a Hooligan.
I don't know. Yeah. Should we even bother shitting on this? I mean, you know, Green Day is a big, massive band that has like a certain amount of corporate infrastructure behind what they're doing. This is clearly a business deal between their entity and this other gigantic entity that has money. So should we care one iota about this from a punk rock standpoint? Or do we say,
I feel like shitting on this is like shitting on like Mitsubishi for like entering into like a deal with like Jensen Phillips, you know, screws.
In other words, it's so far removed from punk that why should we even bother caring?
Yeah.
I guess, can you be a big band and like have any sort of like human soul still attached to what you're doing?
Or do you just get to this
level and like this is just the way it works at that point? Like you play with the big boys.
I don't love Pearl Jam, but like they did the thing where they fought the Scalpers and Ticketmaster, remember? Or even Morrissey. I'm not saying he's nice, but he shoots himself in the foot all the time when it would make more financial sense just to go along with the program. You know what I mean? Or I'm trying to think of another good example of a band that is huge.
Like Pearl Jam did some good things, but they're hardly like the heroes of independent, you know, music. I'm sure their songs are like in the background of a Mercury commercial or something.
But Adam is saying when you become a gigantic band, is there no other way except for to just become a literal corporation whose sole existence is to benefit the shareholders? And I would argue that Pearl Jam, and I don't even like Pearl Jam. I think they're boring. But I think they've done at least a better degree of keeping their soul and at least being a band and holding on to some core values, where it appears as Green Day has no core values at this point, and it's just like, we're a corporation. We want to make money, you know? And I wouldn't even
mind. Our board of directors determined that we should make this deal with the NHL.
I wouldn't even mind that, except for the fact that they still kind of hold themselves out as punk rock. I mean, look at the album title, Father of All Mother Effers. Aren't we rebellious? You're a corporation.
I mean, I'm not even saying that like doing a deal with the NHL is necessarily like the antithesis of being punk or anything like that, right? Like again, mm-hmm. It's more just like the way in that this stuff gets phrased and then projected out into the world by Green Day's organization makes it sound like it's coming from Green Day's organization, right? And you know, maybe if you're Pearl Jam, and again, I don't know why we're using Pearl Jam, but let's use them for this example, right? Let's say you're Pearl Jam and you did something where you were working with some cause or some company or some organization or something like that, and you put out a statement about it. I get the impression they would at least try to make it read like it's coming from the artists. And I read all this stuff that Green Day puts out there, and like it just reads like it's coming from like the communications director of Green Day Inc. And maybe they're just like, maybe you could charitably look at it and say like, you know what, all bands are doing this at that level, and you know, Green Day's at least, you know, being upfront that they're not the ones out there, you know, doing their own, you know, social media pitter patter. So like maybe that's it, but I don't know. It just, it reads awkward, right? Like you want with rock and roll, the illusion of authenticity to come back from the artists that you're into, even if that authenticity makes no sense given the scale that they're at, right? Like we were talking about Metallica earlier, right? If Metallica does something and they either are going to talk about it or promote it or something like that, you want to believe the illusion that the stuff that you are seeing being put out in the band's name is at least wholeheartedly approved by the band. Like, they're not sitting there in Photoshop making their own flyers or anything like that, right? Like, I get that. But you want to believe that, you know, the artwork and the messaging and the sponsorships and whatever else that they're involved in is being done with their knowledge and consent and understanding. But I see all this Green Day stuff and I'm just like, I feel like Green Day could have vanished. They could have fallen down a well 5 years ago, and just everything that's been done in Green Day's name since has been like the product of like Walt Disney Studios. So they have like a writer's room that's just making up new Green Day plot lines.
Adam, do you think this is a Brian Wilson scenario where remember that psychiatrist was like controlling everything Brian Wilson did? Do you think like a psychiatrist is controlling everything that Green Day is doing?
No.
like some Svengali. Like, yeah. Well, it could be.
I think that they like money. They have somehow ridden the career to this point, and they don't particularly care what I think about it. And like that's fine, but just like as someone that is not benefiting from this deal in any which way, like I don't get any of Green Day's money. I don't get any good music from Green Day to listen to. And now I have to listen to these dumb new Green Day songs if I'm at a Sabres game. So
you don't have to.
This doesn't benefit me in any way. So fuck it. So I can shit all over it. At least give me something. Like if Green Day was putting out the fucking best material of their career, and then I had to deal with all this, then that would be okay. But that's not the case.
Well, listen, let's talk about a guy that is giving back. Formerly the most reviled guy in music and still a guy that gets accused of not being punk and not being a sellout. This guy is not partnering with Mitsubishi or the NHL or any other major organization. This guy is partnering with an ape recovery and Habitat Humanity. Who was that, of course? John Lydon of the Sex Pistols and Pill. About a decade ago, John Lydon was on one of these cheesy reality shows in the UK called I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. And it's basically Big Brother with celebrities, where there's a bunch of, quote, celebrities hanging out and they fight with each other. In the United States, we had one with Flavor Flav. It was called – do you guys remember the name of the one with Flavor Flav in the United States?
I never watched that kind of stuff, I got to say.
Well, anyways, it's that in the UK. As it turns out, John Lydon doesn't speak. He acts. And he took his money and he donated to the Tagugama Resource Center, which basically protects and houses endangered and sickly apes. Well, apparently they're facing financial difficulty right now. So John Lydon revealed that 10 years ago he gave them a ton of money to help them exist longer, and now they need some more money, so he's helping them raise money. And I'll tell you, man, punkers love this on John Lydon. They love to say the Sex Pistols weren't punk. They love to say the Sex Pistols were a boys band. But 40 years later, John Lydon is destroying Marky Ramone at press releases, and he's keeping orangutans alive, man. John Lydon, every year, he gets more and more cred in my book, if you ask me.
He was on the show a while ago, right? So I kind of like the idea that everyone gave him shit for doing all this stuff, and then he just like quietly gave the money to chimps. But then didn't make any kind of noise about it for 10 years.
John Lydon's the man. You can't listen. History will prove the victor is right. Isn't that like a statement or something? Or history is written by the victors.
Yeah. But yeah. That's a mangling of a quote that you may have heard at some point for sure. Yeah.
Or two or three quotes.
But the point being, all the crap John Lydon took, And he's coming out cleaner than almost anybody else. I mean, John Lydon's the man. He is punk rock.
I agree. He's a provocateur. I enjoy that.
But I'm gonna add to this. I'm not dissing on Joe Strummer. Joe Strummer is an amazing artist and an amazing singer. And when people look at Strummer and they look at Lydon,
something like 17 years.
And people look at Strummer and they look at Lydon and then they say Strummer, he's about righteousness. He's about doing the right thing and thinking of others, you know, and being and doing what's right and moral. And John Lydon, he's an asshole. He's selfish. He just wants attention. He's not punk. He's all in it for the money. Meanwhile, Joe Strummer, you know, was driving around Spain banging chicks while his wife was given labor, you know. Meanwhile, Joe Strummer had mistresses his entire life. By contrast, John Lydon, when he married, what's her name? That Vivian Westwood. Foster. Aria. He married Ari Up's mother. And when Ari Up passed away, he said, I'm putting Pill on pause. We're not touring for Pill. And he adopted Ari Up's kids. He's been married for like 40 years or something. Nora Foster, that's her name. He's been married for like 40 years. He raised his grandkids because their mother passed away. And it's not my place to say, but the point being is he's going above and beyond in that area that I think most people would. And so he doesn't get credit for that because, as is not an uncommon phenomenon, these guys that say, oh, I'm a good person, I do this, and you should all be like me, those guys are all talk, while the people that are actually doing good stuff and the people that are actually acting moral don't broadcast it because they're busy being moral and they don't have time to broadcast it.
True.
I don't have any follow up on that. Yeah.
John Lydon is the man. He's cool. I would love to. I'm going to try to interview him again. He's cool. He's cool. I mean, sometimes he's a dick, but that's him. That's what he is, you know?
Man. He's an enigma wrapped in a riddle.
He is. Although, honestly, I think if you read his interviews, and I think you pretty much can figure him out. Like
when there's a method. There definitely seems to be a method to his madness.
Yeah. So let's play a song by that band from Serbia, and then we will come back. And Adam, I don't know if you want to smash through some of these or it's up. It's you're driving. So this is by the band from Serbia, and we'll be.
What's the name of the band from Serbia, John? See you again.
Shoplifters. And we'll be back.
Got 30 went down and neither of them were dead boy. 20 years went by since he was that man. 250 be the best he can. Nothing ever changes, time has a plan to forget us all.
That was Shoplifters, and what do we got?
Not to be confused with the Morrissey song "Shoplifters of the World Unite,"
or the band Shoppers.
I don't know them.
Shoppers was the band of the young woman who was she was in not Mannequin, but maybe it was Mannequin Pussy. I'll look that up, she was in a better known band now than Shoppers. I saw Shoppers at 1234 Go Records back in the day.
Oh, John. Always telling stories about all the cool stuff you did back when you were a young man.
Isn't everybody?
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. So some there's some other stuff that is on the list here. But on the other hand, we are an hour and X minutes into this show. So let's take a vote. Or not even a vote.
I'm against it. What is it?
Tom's against it. John, do you, any of these stories, things you particularly need to shout from the rooftops about?
Just one. So Mata Hoople featuring Ian Hunter, who's now 80, and Adam hates Mata Hoople so much. Like before this episode, he was talking about how much he hates Mata Hoople. I mean, Adam is probably Mata Hoople's biggest hater.
He hates Mata Hoople so much that he hates David Bowie for that one song he did with him.
That's right. He does. He does. He hates by association. He even hates Mick Jones by association. So Mata Hoople was supposed to go on tour, a second U.S. tour this summer. They recently toured as Mata Hoople 74 and focused on like their last. It's really Ian Hunter's solo band and Ariel Bender from Mata Hoople and Morgan Fisher from Mata Hoople. So it's really Ian Hunter solo band with a couple of Mata Hoople guys. And I saw him back, I guess it was February or March, and it was astoundingly good. Astoundingly good. Like one of the 10 best shows I've ever saw, probably. Amazing. Anyway, so Ian Hunter was supposed to come back around this summer, or rather early fall. And it turns out that he woke up one day and had very severe tinnitus, and so bad that he can't even go to the post office, nevertheless go on tour, like he said in his statement. In his statement, he actually seemed kind of shooken up. He said, I don't know if it's going to get better, but if it's the end, I've had a great ride, and that's just how it's going to have to be. And so I don't know if that's the good way to go out or a bad way to go out, but it's a bummer that at 80 of all, you wake up and you've got horrible tinnitus. I mean, I guess after playing in a rock band for 55 years, I guess that can happen. I don't really know how tinnitus works, but it's sad. I hope he gets better. I wish him the best. And we've said it before, and see him while you can, because you might not get to see him. And you can't go to every show. I mean, I've thought of shows I missed, and sometimes you just can't go. But if you can go to see the legends, see the legends, because if they're bad, they're bad. But if they're amazing, like Ian Hunter was when I saw him this past summer, you definitely should go. But it's sad that all of a sudden, the guy's 80, he's still going on tour, and he wakes up and he's got life-altering tinnitus. That sucks. What can you say?
That's amazing that it took that long.
Yeah, but isn't it weird that all of a sudden, like, it happens? I don't know how ears work. Like maybe just his eardrum finally like snapped or something, and that was that. I don't know.
I can attest to that because I've had tinnitus for years. It comes and goes. Like if you take care of ears, it can diminish.
Yeah.
There was a time in my like 30s, early 30s, where I had a real hard time sleeping because it was so loud. Now, it's not too bad.
Yeah,
that's what happens when you stand in front of a drum set for 15 years drinking 40 ounces while your brother beats the shit out of his drums and you don't too stupid to put earplugs in.
Where, honestly, I think this is good. Is I see a lot of people with earplugs at shows. 10 or 15 years ago, it was considered dorky to wear earplugs at shows. But you should have even then.
Almost always wear them now. Almost. Yeah,
I always wear earplugs. It actually usually makes the show sound better because it equalizes the volume.
Don't put them in too tight. That's the key. The key is to not jam in there too tight.
Yeah, well, all three of us are pro earplugs.
Yes, we are. That's the one thing we agree on. Not hockey, that's for sure.
I had my 6-year-old at a basement punk show in Toronto on Saturday night, and she had her big giant cone earplug,
like the muffs
on, the right? And then I saw later that like someone who was there photographed me and my kid and put it on Instagram, and then like covered my kid's face in an emoji sticker thing, and then posted some sort of like
bad dad
no like they said, they hashtag like dad goals, like they're like this is This is what I aspire to do with my kid. And look, she's got ear protection. And I thought, hey, I am both cool and responsible. Thanks, slightly creepy random internet person.
I'm sorry, Adam, but it's impossible to be both. You can only be one or the other. You could be cool or you could be responsible. You can't be both.
Mm-hmm. How'd you get to learn to do it, Adam? Like, did you just look for pictures of yourself randomly on Instagram?
I have one of those Facebook algorithms that looks at my face. Someone who I mutually know in the music universe, like, basically was like, is that Adam White? And then, like, tagged me when they said that. So, yeah. It makes you wonder how many photos of any of us are just kind of like out there in the world where someone didn't happen to see it. Makes you wonder. Are we done?
I want to talk about Prince Rama real quick. Prince Rama's broken up.
John can't Adam quit. And Tom hate. The rest of us are going to die. All right, keep going.
Prince Rama has broken up. They're a pretty cool band. It's two twin sisters. I don't think they're twins. It's two sisters that grew up on like a weird commune, like where they weren't allowed to like go out and like the public and stuff like that. And they formed this band called. They're not of Indian descent, but the commune they were on was the Indian religion. I guess Hinduism.
How many arms does your god have, Adam? Because there's had a hell of a lot, I bet.
And so they come from a very unique background. And for about 10 years, they did a band called Prince Rama, which kind of merged like some aspects of the Hindu religion with like modern things. And they kind of did like 80s synth pop, but they also like merged it with goth and a pretty weird band. Well, one of them decided they didn't want to be in a band anymore. So what they did is that they took all their stuff, all their costumes, all their records, all their press clippings, and they set them on fire in a bonfire. They took the ashes and they recorded three songs and they pressed those ashes into a final 7-inch record, which I was going to buy, but it was $50. So I did not buy it. But that's a cool way to go out. I think maybe you don't need to destroy all your old stuff because it's kind of fun to look at your old stuff, you know. But even so, that's a cool artistic statement. And Prince Rama was a cool band.
You know, you say that's a cool artistic statement, John, but I remember how pissed off you were when the kid of Malcolm McLaren was going to burn all that Sex Pistols stuff.
Well, don't you? It's a difference of in my defense, I did say it was kind of wasteful and it's cool looking your old stuff, but also there's a difference of between the kid of the guy that had a business dealing with the guys that created the art burning the stuff and the band burning their own stuff. A little bit of a difference there, you know.
Yeah, it's.
Plus, listen, Prince Rama rules. They're not the Sex Pistols though, but they're cool.
I'm not really familiar with this band at all.
It's not really the greenest thing that you can do to dispose of your extra band detritus. But hey, whatever. Fuck the earth. So, all right, are we?
If they could sell their 7 inches, their new 7-inch for $50, you'd think all the old crap would be worth something.
I'm always suspicious of any of these products where they mix in, you know, some ashes or some blood, like there was that,
because you can do that with your remains, right? Like you can have your
remains pressed in a record. But no, years ago there was a Kiss comic book that came out where they revealed that, like, oh, there was like, you know, the members of Kiss had their blood mixed in with the ink, and it's like, and I look at any of that or even this and I'm like, to what quantity, right? Like what, how many parts per million of that ink was Gene Simmons' blood? And in this case, like, if you're going to make a record and you don't want the record to, like, you know, fall apart, how much of that record is, you know, like the normal oils and shit that they make records out of? And how much of that is the ashes of the sacred merch?
Yeah, just a minuscule amount. Right? But like, even if a minuscule amount of my ashes ended up in a repress of Gang Green's cover of Voices Carried by Bill Tuesday, I'd be pretty cool with that, honestly. I mean, I would probably take off my pinky, burn it into ash, and have it made into a record while I'm still alive so I could appreciate it.
You should, well, I mean, you could, there's nothing stopping you. Do it.
You heard it here first, like, kids. Now. Adam White is encouraging me to cut my pinky off.
Like on the show, right now.
Question. Meredith Graves was in Shoppers, and then she was in the band Perfect. I think it's technically still around. And in one of her records, she put her own blood in the record, and you can see the blood in the record. So what do you think of that? So, hey.
Yeah, but do you really think you could see the blood or like Adam?
I know you can. I'm looking at it right now.
But yeah, but it's just like red dye and just a little tiny bit of blood.
You know, not putting enough blood in that you can
press 500 records where you see the blood.
I feel like I've tried to encourage you to cut your finger off and you're not going to do it. But if this was
fine, Adam, I admit it. I'm pussing out and cutting my finger off.
Well, like if this was a if we were all juggalos and this was an Insane Clown Posse podcast, I feel that you would cut your finger off.
What do you mean if we were all juggalos?
You'd cut your finger off. Those people, they don't fuck around with
this. I mean, I really don't use my pinky much, but that's one of those things where my wife would probably be irritated with me.
Do you not come from like juggalo country? Who needs that?
Yeah, they're from the Detroit area.
Yeah, right? Like, you just...
So I remember fucking... one year, many, many years ago, this had to be 20 years ago, my wife and I and my brother and his girlfriend at the time went to see a Tiger game. And we stayed a little bit out of town, and we go to our hotel, and there's all these, like, young people dressed like clowns, their faces all painted and stuff. And we had accidentally stayed at the hotel where all the kids were staying for the gathering of the Juggalos when it used to be in Novi, a Detroit suburb. So, yeah, that was not recommended.